is Frederick Focus. News Radio 930 WFMD talks to newsmakers throughout mid-Maryland with your host, Ryan Hedrick.
And welcome to the first show of 2022. It is the Frederick Focus Show. I am your host, Ryan Hedrick, and I hope you are well, and I hope that you're jumping into 2022 with a full head of steam. We have a great show, a very unique show, because as you know, a couple of days ago was the one-year anniversary of the January 6th Capitol riots, in which more than 500 people were charged, but not with acts of insurrection, as the Democrat Party would have you to think. In fact, Joe Biden reacting to the anniversary of January 6th, doubling down that the attacks at the U.S. Capitol were, in fact, an attack on democracy.
He can't accept he lost, even though that's what 93 United States senators, his own attorney general, his own vice president, governors and state officials in every battleground state have all said. He lost.
And that was Biden reacting to the one-year anniversary. And on to talk about this issue is a senior contributor to The Federalist, also a reader, writer, thinker, communicator, and truth seeker, Ben Weingarten, benweingarten.com. Ben, thank you so much for making time. How are you? Happy New Year, my friend.
I'm well. Happy New Year, and thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. So let's dive right into this. First of all, let's go back to January 6th of 2021. Where were you and what was going through your head as all this was transpiring?
Well, as I recall, I was pretty bleary-eyed, having disappointedly watched the election results of the Georgia Senate races and anticipating an onslaught on a whole variety of bases of leftism under a Democrat-dominated government. You know, watching those images at the time, and those images are powerful, and they've served a very powerful political purpose, clearly. And, you know, what came to mind was that this does not at all represent what the America First movement was about, and that the worst of the actors on screen were completely undermining and distracting from legitimate questions about the integrity of the 2020 election, which millions of Americans continue to share. Reasonably so, the first mass mail-in ballot election in American history with a whole slew of irregularities associated with it. But you can't say that now. Subsequent to January 6th, all such speeches verboten and get you booted off of social media. And that also this event, for as despicable as the worst acts that were perpetrated were, that ought to be prosecuted to the fullest extent, and that should be the case regardless of the political stripe of people engaging in those acts, would be used as a catalyzing event to accelerate a Democrat attempt to crush their political opposition and to frame tens of millions of Americans as insurrectionists or would-be insurrectionists on the basis of the actions of a violent minority of a minority in Washington, D.C. that day, and use that to maximum effect. And I think that has proven out. I wrote that at the Federalist a week after January 6th. This would be the catalyzing event for this crackdown on dissent, this war on wrongthink in America. And we've seen that play out over the last year and continue now in this first several days of 2022 with the attempted continued exploitation of January 6th.
Also interesting to point out that you are the editor of a publication called Real Clear Investigations, and you just did kind of a side-by-side comparison between January 6th and the BLM riots, which the left will tell you if BLM did anything wrong, they would have been held accountable. But to the contrary, because they weren't held accountable, they burned down cities, caused billions of dollars in damage. And you kind of document this in your side-by-side comparison. Let's get into that as well.
Yeah, we thought that as a public service, many Americans, according to polling, believe that just as the roots and the outcomes of January 6th ought to be looked at, investigated by authorities, so too ought the summer 2020 riots to be investigated. And what we try to lay out in this side-by-side comparison, and every point that we make in this comparison is cited and sourced from the most authoritative sources, you know, federal government data and press releases on down. We try to put a side-by-side of the size, scope, and nature of what transpired on January 6th versus the size, scope, and nature of what transpired during the rolling summer 2020 riots. And then also put as a side-by-side a comparison in terms of the investigative and prosecutorial vigor associated with the pursuit of those implicated in crimes in these two events. And, you know, what we leave to the readers to make a determination as to whether they are comparable, as to whether the rhetoric, the narrative about January 6th actually fits the substance, the facts of the case. And a couple high-level things worth pointing out. And first, let me just say, you know, at the top, you talked about the Capitol riot or sort of whatever we're calling it. It's really interesting to note that in the rhetoric of the Department of Justice, the Biden administration, and, of course, Democrat leaders, January 6th, and Kamala Harris made this reference in her remarks this week, compared January 6th to 9/11, Pearl Harbor. President Biden has compared it as well to the worst of the Civil War. The Department of Justice and prosecutors have referred to this in court cases associated with January 6th as an act of domestic terrorism and the like. Yet not one person has been charged with insurrection, mm-hmm. sedition, treason, or terrorism. So there's a political case that's being put forth, but that does not match the case that's being made in a court of law by, of course, a Justice Department that is as hostile as one could be to the actors on January 6th. And I think that's a really telling point. But at a high level, just two takeaways that I think are worth pointing out. First of all, in terms of the gravity of what transpired, the summer 2020 riots resulted, as we lay out in this side-by-side, in 15 times more injured police officers, 23 times as many arrests, and estimated damages in dollar terms of up to 1,300 times more than the cost, the $1.5 million in estimated damages at the Capitol breach, as the feds refer to it themselves. If you look at the pursuit of those implicated in crimes associated with those events, it's pretty remarkable. In both cases, the vast majority of charges that were laid out were misdemeanor charges, were lower-level charges. Of the 700-plus people who have been charged associated with the Capitol riot, vast majority misdemeanors. In fact, to the point that one of the D.C. Circuit judges overseeing these cases has chastised the Biden Department of Justice for saying, and this is in the judge's words, that you're prosecuting the crime of the century with Class B misdemeanor charges. Mm. However, it's worth noting that in spite of the fact that judges have challenged the sentences put forth by the Biden DOJ, and in some cases even gone beyond the sentencing guidelines put forth by the DOJ, with respect to the summer 2020 riots, in mass, 90%+ of citations or charges were dropped, dismissed, or otherwise not filed in a dozen major jurisdictions. Basically, cases were kicked for all but the most serious crimes across the country associated with the summer 2020 riots. In the case of the January 6th Capitol breach, one case has been dismissed thus far. And we can go into a whole slew of other differences in terms of how they're being prosecuted, in terms of dozens of people being held, many of whom had no criminal background or history of violence, and some of whom are being held again on charges of essentially glorified trespassing, have been held in pretrial detention for months on end. Some of them will be held in pretrial detention for well over a year. And in at least one instance, an individual spent more time in pretrial detention than the maximum sentence for which he was ultimately charged. Compare that to the summer 2020 riots. There was a fraction of people who were held in pretrial detention, and in many cases, they were ultimately released on appeal. These are just some of the many disparities that appear when you look at the facts side by side, and we leave it to readers to make their own determination as to whether there's a double standard here, as to whether there's politicization, and whether we have equal justice in the country.
Ben Weingarten joining us right here on the Frederick Focus Show on 930 WFMD and 99.9 WFRE. And Ben making some great points. I do want to bring up the word unprecedented has been used by the left over and over and over again. I want to go back real quick to Joe Biden's pointed remarks on Thursday as he addressed the nation on the one-year anniversary of the January 6th riots.
For the first time in our history, a president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed. They failed.
Yeah, I wonder what his thoughts are about the 2016 narrative that Hillary Clinton threw out, that Donald Trump was an illegitimate president. And then in 2017, when Trump was inaugurated, Ben, we saw 200 people arrested, multiple police officers injured. during multiple instances of violence in the nation's capital. Was that not trying to prevent a peaceful transition of power?
We also saw, of course, you know, when you talk about political violence, I mean, first of all, the Capitol has literally been bombed in the past by leftists. But leave that aside. Leave aside, you know, the banging on the doors of the Supreme Court during the Kavanaugh confirmation. Leave aside a whole slew of other events. And the fact that in that 2017 inauguration riot, as you note, of the couple hundred people arrested, they were pretty much all dismissed. Almost every single person involved, with a small fraction of guilty pleas. Let's not forget that, to your point, and also, of course, in the summer of 2020, there was an attempted breach of the White House by protesters outside there as well. So set aside all of those obvious potential double standards there. Democrats challenged the election of a Republican president in Congress in 2000, in 2004, in 2016. They claimed that President Trump was illegitimate from before the time he was ever seated in the White House. I've made the case repeatedly that you could argue that there was never truly a peaceful transfer of power in the truest sense during the Trump presidency, when you consider the subversion, the sabotage, the undermining by officers supposed to serve under his administration, who thwarted him and undermined him, arguably illegally at every turn. And that's before we even get into, of course, Russiagate, which hung over the entire presidency on fraudulent grounds, has been exposed chapter and verse and continues to be exposed with the Durham special counsel. I mean, look, you could argue, you can make a case that General Milley's acts to undermine the president, to reach out to his Chinese counterpart and threaten to tip him off with actionable intelligence about matters of war and peace or getting into the nuclear weapon protocols. I mean, all of these sorts of things. Every week of the Trump presidency, there were stories like that. So I think there's a bit of a doth protest too much here from folks who have challenged presidential elections, who claimed an illegitimate presidency for more than 4 years and continue to claim he's illegitimate, who whitewashed, as you note, the summer 2020 violence. And in some cases, when it comes to the vice president, for example, supported bail funds that incentivized that very kind of behavior. And setting all that aside, you know, when you talk about political violence and terrorism, let's not forget that the Democrat Party, the Obama-Biden administration, its chief achievement on the national security and foreign policy side, arguably, was an Iran nuclear deal that empowered, aided, abetted, and enabled the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism with over $100 billion in funds, the lifeblood of its terror, and of course, enshrined and devoted America to protecting its nuclear program. So on every single one of these bases, it's laughable, it's hypocritical, and it proves it's a charade, the narrative being put forth. But I think it's very telling that this is what Democrats are focused on in week one of 2022, because they don't really want to talk about the merits or the substance of their policy. They want to talk about several hours on a single day with several hundred people acting in a way that obviously was condemned and was drew outrage from the very beginning and called for prosecution from the very beginning for people of all political stripes. They want to make that the seminal issue that they run in 2022, and as a justification, as Chuck Schumer laid out this week, for nuking the filibuster to counter Republican election integrity measures and state legislators across the country on the grounds that that constitutes a continued rolling insurrection. I think that straining and that effort to compare January 6th to the worst attacks in American history, I think speaks for itself in terms of the case the Democrats have, which is they have none on the merits.
Yeah, I remember. Well, I don't remember, but obviously, you know, studying in school and then reading history and just being privy to information. March 4th, 1954, five members of Congress shot by Puerto Rican nationalists. So this is certainly not unprecedented violence that we saw at the Capitol. It's just, you know, the Democrats want to further that narrative that the attack on democracy is not safe in the hands of Donald Trump and conservative Republicans. We're talking to Ben Weingarten. You can check him out, and I would definitely advise you to do that at benweingarten.com. We'll talk about his upcoming projects. Ben, I do also want to ask you, how do Republicans bounce back from this? Because if you remember in the aftermath of this event, Donald Trump not only being banned from social media, sitting president banned from social media, but subsequent attacks on Republicans. Most recently, the Republican from Georgia, she was banned from Twitter. Now speaking out, I mean, Republicans all over the place are getting banned from social media platforms or being shadow banned. What to make of subsequent attacks, not just on Trump, but on the Republican Party as a whole?
Yeah, well, I think, and President Trump himself has made this case explicitly in the past, the effort to harass, use every legal and arguably extra legal or illegal measure to pursue him and his family and anyone in his orbit, and that obviously continues to this day and probably will continue for the rest of the president's life and the lives of his children, that is a stand-in, a proxy for tens of millions of Americans who believed in the agenda that was put forth, an America First agenda, an anti-establishment populist agenda that challenged the conventional wisdom of our ruling class. And the reason they came with the full force against Trump and those around him was to send a message to everyone else. Don't you dare threaten our power, our privilege, our agenda with this competing agenda. And so in some respects, this assault that you talk about, and you know, it's not just nuking people on social media, it's bouncing them off of payment processing platforms. It's exposing, you know, doxing them and exposing them to their employers to try to get them thrown out of their offices for daring to dissent from whatever the woke orthodoxy is on a weekly basis. All of this is about instilling fear, intimidation, chilling people into submission. And it's also about trying to have a monopoly on whatever the narrative is, because the people are smart enough to see that what they're told oftentimes by our establishment, by our institutions, proves false. And so consequently, and I wrote about this in Newsweek this week, in this war on dissent that we see going on, you know, there are three kind of major issues that they have used, they being the ruling class, have used to try and pursue wrong-thinking dissenters. And those are questions about 2020 election integrity, because if you dare question issues around that election, you question the legitimacy of our political leaders. Number two being, of course, the coronavirus lockdowns, restrictions, and the policies and proclamations associated with it, because the coronavirus has been leveraged to control basically every aspect of our lives arbitrarily and capriciously for months on end. Can't challenge them on any of those questions, even when they flip-flop in real time. And the things that got people banned and censored from social media suddenly come out of the mouths of the likes of Dr. Fauci's of the world. And then critical race theory, or what I would call racial Marxism, and challenging the schools that we pay for to send our kids to. You can't dare challenge that, because schools are where the regime seeks to indoctrinate people in its ideology. In all of these instances, those who dare dissent are being portrayed as threats to national security, public health, or both in some cases. And we've seen it with the Biden administration national strategy for countering domestic terrorism, the first of its kind, with a variety of threat bulletins claiming that people pose a threat who dare have questions about 2020 or the COVID lockdowns and the like. And we've also seen it, of course, in that infamous DOJ directive calling for the targeting of parents who dare challenge school boards on all of these issues. And I think it betrays a weakness that they can't make an argument on the merits, but it's also incredibly disturbing that you have the full force of the federal government and the private sector as well, working hand in hand to try to stomp out dissent, chill, intimidate people, and in some cases prosecute them to the fullest extent. And the last thing I'll say on it is that those being held in the D.C. jail, about 40 plus people right now associated with the Capitol riot, again, many of whom had no criminal records in the past, histories of violence, and some of them on lower level crimes, they have alleged abuse, they've alleged inhumane treatment, they've claimed in some cases to be held for 20 plus hours at a time, up to 23 hours at a time in solitary confinement, and the like, up to the point that a judge has pulled some people out of that jail and also had several hundred prisoners moved out of the jail, but not the Capitol breach defendants there, interestingly, even though they were the ones that raised the issues associated with it. I think they serve as the tip of the spear of this is what could happen to you if you dare cross us. And none of that is to excuse or condone or dismiss the crimes that ought to be prosecuted to the fullest extent. But it seems clear that a message is being delivered to the American people, and Donald Trump and those being held in that jail and then the tens of millions of others being targeted in a variety of ways now are a testament to it.
The Washington Examiner had a very interesting investigative report a couple of days ago when they said federal authorities won't explain why three men who participated in the Capitol riot on January 6th last year have mysteriously disappeared from the FBI's Capitol Violence Most Wanted list. Why the secretive nature around some of these people? We still don't know who the actors were, who all the actors were in these quote-unquote riots, do we, Ben?
Well, what we do know from authorities, at least as they've leaked to major publications, is there were at least a couple informants, federal informants, on the ground that day. We know that in at least one case, lawyers for Capitol breach defendants have claimed at least four provocateurs on the ground during what transpired that day. We learned this week in a report from Newsweek that there were federal assets on the ground at the Capitol and ready to deploy in advance of what transpired at the Capitol as well. We know that Merrick Garland was questioned by Congressman Massey about one of the individuals, Ray Epps, who has been investigated to the nth degree by Revolver News and some great reporting, asked, you know, what about informants on the ground? And this person is filmed on video on January 5th and then on January 6th saying we have to go into the Capitol. You know, what do you know about this, Attorney General? And he obfuscated on it. And there are several others that have been identified as unindicted co-conspirators, people who would seem to have been knee deep in what transpired that day, who have been in some cases pulled off of the FBI's wanted list or this database that they've compiled. And you have to ask the question, why? Why, when you have the most widespread, deeply investigated case, arguably in American history, are these individuals who are documented so deeply walking when you have these low-level offenses, you know, the FBI banging down the doors of grandmas who were set foot there, some who were literally walked into a building, didn't violently push their way in. You know, why is there this seeming disparate treatment? And then the secrecy, to your point. And in terms of the secrecy, let's also mention the fact that there's more than 14,000 hours of footage that the authorities have withheld. That raises the question, if this is the worst event in American history, shouldn't we see that footage? And shouldn't we know what fully transpired that day? And in certain instances, in one case, some of that footage was released and it did prove seemingly exculpatory to the case of one of the defendants. So you have to ask yourself, why the secrecy on that? Shouldn't we be able to see the 14,000 hours? Are the allegations that have been raised true, that maybe there was police misconduct that day and provocation or instigation of the worst of the acts? The government opens itself up to all manner of speculation when they hide that footage and when they're not really responsive about informants. And the informant question is important because we know that in the case of the purported attempt to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, that there was one informant for every single defendant associated with that case. So it just raises questions that the government could simply answer, but their obfuscation on it only raises more speculation and more questions about what they're really up to on the heels of several years now of exposure of hyper-politicization at the highest levels in the Trump years of our national security and foreign policy, intelligence, and law enforcement apparatuses.
And many think that the U.S. government has used this opportunity as an unprecedented opportunity to increase its spying capabilities on the average American, especially conservative Republicans, using social media and other tools to kind of silence those people. Ben, we have about a minute left for this. I'd love for you to promote your work. What are you working on? Where can people find you?
I appreciate that. You can find me at winegarden.substack.com. Subscribe to my newsletter there. I'm probably too active on Twitter at BH Winegarden. I wrote a book a couple years ago, right before the onset of the pandemic, American Ingrate Ilhan Omar and the Progressive Islamist Takeover of the Democrat Party, where basically I said that the squad was becoming the Democrat Party, the party was beholden to it. And I think we've seen that in the first year plus of the Biden administration, which has proven arguably maybe the most radical administration in American history, with supposedly moderate, longtime establishmentarian Joe Biden at the helm. So I think it's proved that thesis out. And I'll have a book coming later this year on communist China and the imperative for America to declare independence from the CCP. We're dealing today with a hot war by other means from our greatest adversary, communist China, and a cold civil war at home with our ruling class, which is oftentimes aligned, sadly, with communist China and seeking to emulate in terms of the power grabs, the CCP. But we need to extricate ourselves from this poisonous panda hug that communist China has been engaged in with us to defend our sovereignty, our liberty, and our independence. But, of course, it starts with getting our house in order here at home first.
All right, Ben, I got to go. Thank you so much for joining us on the Frederick Focus Show. Until next week, I'm Ryan Hedrick. You've been listening to the Frederick Focus Show on 930 WFMD and 99.9 WFRE. Have a great week.
Frederick Focus has been a public service of News Radio 930 WFMD.